Afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. June 6th, the House Water Committee. We are in session, and I think we have a member right outside the door that will be in momentarily, which will make our quorum. Representative Kummel is going to be a little late, and I'm not sure about a couple of the others. And we are going to be talking this afternoon about House Bill 3494. We have a public hearing and possible work session. I can assure you we will not get to a work session today, or in all likelihood won't get to a work session today. So we will start the public hearing. And let me ask, Representative, did you want to lead off?
Yes, Mr. Chair, if I may.
Please, would you?
Well, Mr. Chairman, first of all, I'm Chuck Burley, State Representative, House District 54, which represents the city of Bend, which I think, as everybody knows, is in the Deschutes Basin. I want to thank you for your leadership and making this opportunity available for what is a very important matter for us in the Deschutes Basin. In September 2002, the Water Resource Commission adopted mitigation rules for the Deschutes Basin. These rules allowed for the appropriation of groundwater in the basin and established mitigation requirements, including the establishment of mitigation banks and credits. Last month, May 18th, the Oregon Court of Appeals ruled that the Commission had exceeded its statutory authority in adopting those rules. And the court stated specifically, and I'll quote, "We recognize that the question of the appropriate balance between the protection and use of the resources at issue here is a policy decision that is appropriately made by the legislature. If the legislature should choose to alter the policy presently embodied in the statutes, it is free to do so." End quote. House Bill 3494 provides the policy decision which the court referenced. It removes the questions of whether or not the commission has the authority to adopt mitigation rules. This will cause the same rules that have been in effect since September 2002 to continue. These rules came into existence after the Deschutes Basin Steering Committee met for 5 years. Although no consensus was reached with the environmental groups, including Water Watch, they were a part of the steering committee. The commission adopted the rules after public hearing and public comment, both in the basin and in Salem. And my point here is that it was a thoughtful process that engaged not only the Deschutes Basin community, but those from outside the area, including engineers, hydrologists, biologists, etc. Cities, water districts, irrigation districts, farmers, and individuals have all relied on these rules in planning their futures. They have invested millions of dollars in water projects, mitigation credits, in order to provide additional groundwater to their users or themselves. These mitigation projects have provided important mechanisms to not only maintain existing stream flows, but add additional surface water where necessary. A safe, reliable water supply is necessary for the region's economic future. It is the necessary ingredient in order to provide financial stability, not only businesses and residences, but also irrigation districts and their patrons. It's the best way to provide protection for fishery, wildlife, and existing water rights, and at the same time maintaining the resource land base in the Deschutes Basin. It facilitates orderly development of water markets and water projects. In other words, despite its limited duration, it has had significant success and will continue to be successful if House Bill 3494 is passed. And, Mr. Chairman, a couple of little facts I'd like to also add for the record here. First is that since these mitigation rules have been in effect, in the Deschutes Basin, there have been new water permits granted for approximately 700 acre-feet of consumed water. During that same period of time, approximately 2,500 acre-feet of water has been protected in stream. I also want to refer to a 2001 U.S. Geological Survey report that was done on the groundwater flow in the Upper Deschutes Basin. There's a couple of points here that I think are very relevant to this issue. The USGS in that report estimated that the consumptive use of groundwater for public water supplies in the entire basin is a mere 10 cubic feet per second, CFS. Now, that was in the mid-90s. It's higher than that now, probably. But compared to the summer stream flow of the lower Deschutes, which is approximately 4,000 CFS at the Madras Gauging Station, the consumptive public use is a very small portion of that. Also, as the USGS pointed out in their report, and I'll quote this, the amount of groundwater use also is small compared to the observed natural fluctuations in groundwater discharge. They went on to continue, they stated that climate-driven groundwater discharge fluctuations could account for variations in late-season monthly mean flows of the Deschutes River at Madras on the order of 1,000 CFS. The point here, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, is that there's nobody in the Deschutes Basin, myself included, that would want to do anything to harm the flow of the river. In fact, every opportunity I get, I like to go out and fish. I fish the lower Deschutes, I fish the middle Deschutes, I fish everywhere I can. And we don't want to do anything that's going to harm the river. But at the same time, as these rules have provided for us, it gives us that opportunity for orderly development. Again, I want to point out and just reemphasize that since these rules have been in effect, 700 CFS new water rights, 2,500 put back in the stream. I think that's a pretty good success story. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Quisenette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and honorable committee members. For the record, I'm Representative Gene Wisnett from District 53, which has the Deschutes River going through it. Thank you for allowing me to testify before this committee on House Bill 3494, which is very important to my constituents in rural Deschutes County. Representative Burley has provided the committee the detailed background on the need for this bill, as stated by the Oregon Court of Appeals judge. This bill, HB 3494, will put into law the Deschutes Basin mitigation rules, which would have been in effect since September 2002, and thus will satisfy the court's concern about the Oregon Water Resource Commission mitigation rules. I'm testifying to be sure this committee understands the importance of this bill to maintain the existing stream flows and additional surface waters, but also for the economic future of Deschutes County and its cities. In basic terms, the Water Resource Commission adopted mitigation rules for Deschutes Basin in 2002. Water Watch of Oregon questioned the authority of the commission to establish these rules. The Oregon Court of Appeals concurred with the challenge but allowed the legislature to authorize the 2002 mitigation rules, which this bill will do. You may ask, are the mitigation rules effective? Representative Burley stated this a couple times. I'll give it to you for the third time. You may ask, are the mitigation rules effective? Oregon Water Resource Department stated that since mitigation rules have been in effect, there have been new water permits granted for 700 acre-feet of consumed water, and during the same period, 2,500 acres-feet of water has been protected in stream. I believe the rules are protecting our water resources. Please approve this important bill for our communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Are there questions? Representative Brown.
Mr. Chair, can you tell me, did the Water Watch object to the rules or just to the fact that they should be placed in statute by the legislature?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, I'm not the best person to answer that question. There's other folks here that will be testifying that were involved in that process on a daily basis that could answer that question for you.
Thank you.
And Representative, subsequent material to be added to your will be the court decision. I don't believe you've done that yet, have you? But you will be getting a copy of the court decision on that. Are there other questions?
Thank you
very much. And Gene, if you'd like to join us up here, you're certainly welcome to.
Thanks. Thank you.
Okay. It would seem, I suppose, at this point appropriate, since your name has been somewhat taken in vain, Karen, to give you the next...
front page of the paper? Mm-hmm.
I saw the front page of the paper.
Is there any of these things? Is there any sites that seem to be in arbitration? You don't tell.
But you know the same.
Good afternoon, Ken. Who's up?
I'm up.
Okay. For the record, please.
Chair Jensen, John DeVoe, Executive Director of Water Watch of Oregon, with Karen Russell, who is a senior staff attorney with Water Watch. The Deschutes River is a world-class river. It's an internationally known river, and it has an international reputation, and it's really a national treasure. It's been described as the queen of North American trout streams. It's a significant ecological and economic engine for Central Oregon. There are hundreds of river-related businesses that rely on the Deschutes in a healthy condition for their business enterprises. These include hotels, motels. If you open Oregon Business Magazine, you will see a full-page layout from Brooks Resources saying they're not making any more riverfront property, and the background shot for that will be the river. There are rafting outfitters, there are fishing outfitters, there are manufacturers of the equipment associated with these activities. The Deschutes receives the highest level of recreational use of any river in Oregon. These are big economic stakes that are totally wound up in the health of the river. So it supports many business interests in Central Oregon, and it relies... To do that, it relies on the health of the river, on adequate flows. The Institute for Natural Resources at Oregon State studied some of the benefits of scenic waterways and in-stream water rights in Oregon and wrote, quote, "Scenic waterways are some of the most highly valued components of the state's natural landscapes and thus play an important role in the lives of many Oregonians. Longtime residents and newcomers alike place considerable importance on access to waterways, and businesses follow on the heels of rising numbers of people migrating here to increase their quality of life. To the degree that such trends are seen as benefiting Oregonians, protection of state waterways may thus be even more important now than ever. Support for administrative institutions and mechanisms for seeing that these mandates of the Scenic Waterway Act are implemented will be critical for the same reasons." The court decision that resulted in why we're here today ruled that the mitigation program violates the standards set forth in the Oregon Scenic Waterway Act. That act was passed by citizen referendum, citizen initiative in 1970. It was passed by a 2-to-1 margin, and over 406,000 Oregonians voted to protect these rivers, including the Deschutes River, which was one of the first six rivers designated under that act. What the act does is it requires the maintenance of the free-flowing character of the river, and it declares that the highest and best uses of water on reaches of rivers designated as scenic under this act are for fisheries, wildlife, and recreation. And so we have a designation of the Deschutes. In 1988, we had a decision from the Supreme Court called the Dyack decision, which is a famous case, that said this standard can be quantified and it means something. It means a numeric level of flow to be set in the river. In 1991, we had in-stream water rights established for the lower Deschutes, below Pelton Round Butte to the mouth at the Columbia. And the flow levels that are set by the state scenic waterway flows and the in-stream water rights are the same amount, but they vary month by month over the course of the year. It's important to note that the in-stream water rights on the lower river are senior to new groundwater development in the upper basin. And I think it's appropriate to talk a little bit about the hydrology of the basin. Basically, what you have is groundwater in the basin flowing from the north end of the basin down towards the Lake Billy Chinook area. And there it tends to discharge into the river channel, into the Crooked, the Metolius, and the Deschutes, and into Lake Billy Chinook in that area. Almost 90% of the flow of the lower river is groundwater discharge into the river during the dry season. So there's a very close connection between groundwater and surface water flows in the Deschutes River. And that's why the mitigation program that the court ruled was invalid is so important and was not up to standard. We also have a situation in the Deschutes where surface water flows have been fully appropriated and are in fact over-appropriated in many areas of the basin. And so people are turning to groundwater. But as they turn to groundwater, they need to account for the impact new groundwater uses will have on these protected surface flows in other reaches of the basin. Thus, the mitigation program came into place. Karen is going to talk a little bit about some of the history behind the development of the mitigation program, the lawsuit itself, and then add some recommendations that we feel would be important to any further progress on this bill.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, my name is Karen Russell. The Court of Appeals decision, first of all, Water Watch was involved in the rulemaking proceedings leading up to the court case. Water Watch tried to work with the department and others to come to a mitigation program, that we thought would meet the statutory standards. And we were open about that, but unfortunately the program we felt didn't meet the requirements of the statute. I want to note that Water Watch was joined in this case by five or six individuals, some of which are landowners on the river, Imperial River Company, Deschutes Canyon Fly Shop, Alder Creek Kayak Supply, Inc., and several other nonprofits. So there are, and who either work, play, recreate in the basin. So there was a broad coalition of people who both participated in the rulemakings and then joined in the lawsuit because they felt that the rules didn't adequately protect the resource. Now, what was at issue in the case was the standard that the state must apply when looking at mitigation for new groundwater development in the Deschutes Basin. And that standard was put into law by the legislature in 1995, Senate Bill 1033. And that standard required that mitigation must maintain the free-flowing characters of the scenic waterway in amounts necessary for fish, wildlife, and recreation. Unfortunately, the rules adopted by the state don't require maintenance of scenic flows. They only require moderation of impacts to scenic flows. And they don't require mitigation to match the impacts in terms of the impacts of groundwater development on the Deschutes River in terms of the timing, amount, and location of impact. And in particular, part of the court opinion focused on, and we had focused on, this annualized volumetric-based approach to mitigation, saying that you have a total volume of water that you're putting in stream doesn't guarantee that you're protecting the flows in the amounts and in the timing that the impact is happening. And in the court case, the court cited to some testimony provided by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife that kind of tried to articulate that concern. ODF&W in the case said that flow levels in the river are directly related to available spawning and rearing habitat, especially in the lower Deschutes River, where small drops in flow levels result in much larger reductions in available habitat. Allowing the overall flow periods to decline further will result in far greater impact to fish populations than would be indicated by average long-term flows. In the case of the lower river, where several species are endangered, this could prevent recovery of these species. So the rules have an approach to them that just won't ensure that we're maintaining scenic flows as we're allowing new groundwater uses in the Deschutes Basin. Now, again, the Court of Appeals decision doesn't say that the state can't develop a mitigation program. The state can. All that case does is identify the statutory standard that that the state needs to follow in developing such a program. So getting to the bill at issue today, we urge you to vote no on the bill for several reasons. First, in its current form, it does nothing to address the shortcomings in the Deschutes Basin Mitigation Program. Those are articulated in the court opinion, and I've raised several problems with the plan. We believe it's time for all the stakeholders that have a stake in that river system to craft a plan for the basin that will allow new uses of groundwater while maintaining scenic flows. And as John mentioned, again, protecting river flows in the Deschutes Basin goes beyond simply protecting fish and wildlife in the abstract. There are businesses, as represented by the petitioners in the Water Watch case, that rely on those river flows for their livelihood.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you. Karen, please explain to me what scenic flow is, maintaining the scenic flow, what that means.
The state of Oregon, and I can't remember, after the Scenic Waterway Act was passed by the voters of Oregon, the state embarked on a program to figure out what levels were needed to be maintained in the different scenic waterways throughout the state. And those flow levels are usually expressed in terms of cubic feet per second by month. So an instantaneous flow that needs to be maintained in the river, usually set by month, in order to protect the values of the scenic waterway. And in the case of the Scenic Waterway Act, it's fish, wildlife, and recreational values of the lower river. Of the scenic system. And so the state has done that. They figured out what flows are needed to protect those values. And the case says, and the statute currently says, that the agency has an obligation to maintain those flows when they're making water allocation decisions, meaning no diminishment of those flows.
So, yeah, okay, thank you. So, Karen, am I understanding you to say that it isn't enough to have so many cubic feet per second, say, from January through December, but it has to be maintained at certain times throughout the year? Is that what I'm understanding?
Yes. So, in other words, let's say the state says we need 300 cubic feet per second in the month of May, then they would look to make sure that whatever they were doing wouldn't drop flows below that 300 cubic feet per second.
Even though in another month it might be even greater the flow than has been recommended. Is
right.
that correct?
And that's because fish, you know, if I'm recreating on the river and I'm there in May and there's no water, then I can't recreate. I mean, the idea with a river is that to be a river, it needs water year-round and in different amounts to support the values of the river. Did I answer? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Second.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me. May I?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Karen, what is the minimum flow requirement? What is the minimum, the absolute bottom line that we can draw down to? Lower Deschutes.
I don't know the exact figures. I can get those for you, but the state has determined those, and we have them in our briefing, and which I of course didn't bring.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you know what the flow is today?
No, I don't.
Mr. Chairman, may I? Yes, thank you. Karen, I want to go back to your comments and help me here. You said that in the court's decision, they addressed the standards that have to be met for mitigation rules, which is different than judging whether or not the rules themselves were good or bad, would work or wouldn't work. Is that correct?
Chair Jensen, the statute sets the standard for mitigation, which is to maintain flows in the river. And the state's mitigation program, which implements the statute, has to meet that statutory standard. So the court looked at the rules and looked at the statute and said, because the rules do not require maintenance of those flows, it doesn't meet the requirement. The agency has exceeded its statutory authority.
Okay. Follow-up. Thank you, sir. And then I believe you both had mentioned in your testimony that 3494 is currently drafted would not, and I guess this, I didn't quite understand what you were saying. Were you suggesting that it's amending the Scenic Waterway Act, or were you just making the same point that it doesn't maintain those flows?
Chair Jensen, Representative, in looking, we've had only a short time to review the bill, so if I've misread it, but the way I understand the bill to be drafted, it says that those rules satisfy the requirements of the Scenic Waterway Act, the In-Stream Water Rights Act, and the Groundwater Act. So as we read it, it would take a rule program, a mitigation program, that doesn't maintain and protect scenic flows and in-stream water rights and allow it to move forward. And we believe that the voters of Oregon, that wasn't what the voters of Oregon intended with the passage of the ballot initiative. And I guess we also believe that there are ways to address the water conflicts in the basin and the need to address growing communities and the need to protect agriculture that doesn't involve a mitigation program that's going to undermine scenic flows. And my second point, I think that the bill is unnecessary. There is a provision in the Oregon Scenic Waterway Act. It was something added in 1995 when there were amendments to the act to deal with groundwater development. ORS 390835 sub 12 that could allow the state to allow additional groundwater as long as those uses won't significantly impair scenic flows. And so we would just urge this committee to, rather than to codify what we think is a defective mitigation program, that maybe we should explore the use of other available tools in the law. Let's see. I think my fourth point would be, because of the way the bill is written, we think it might embark on a slippery slope by allowing junior uses of groundwater to diminish senior surface water rights in the basin. Now, I say that because the mitigation rules at issue in the court case allow diminishment of surface flows in the Deschutes Basin because they don't require that new groundwater use eliminate the impacts on surface waters. And so whether you're a surface water right holder that diverts water for irrigation or an in-stream water right, there will be less water in the river to meet your needs. So the bill raises the issue of maybe impairing not just in-stream rights, but also other surface water rights that would be relying on stream flows to meet their needs. We just want to also note that in July 2004, there was a settlement agreement relating to the relicensing of the Pelton Hydro Complex. But I'd like to point out that Water Watch was one of the participants in that negotiation. And as a result of that relicensing settlement, there will be reintroduction of fish species listed under the Endangered Species Act in the upper reaches of the basin. And we're concerned that by sanctioning further erosion and degradation of available aquatic habitat that could potentially happen from codifying these mitigation rules, that we will be moving farther away from the solutions that we're going to be needing to reach in the basin, and increasing additional conflicts over water. So I didn't come here just to criticize. Water Watch has some ideas, and we have been beginning to talk to people in the basin about this, but what we would like to see is, rather than codifying a defective mitigation program that allows diminishment of scenic flows, potential injury to scenic water or in-stream water rights, and could potentially exacerbate endangered species concerns in the basin, we would urge an establishment of a multi-stakeholder forum for negotiation, something that's facilitated, something that could be modeled after the recent completed settlement negotiations for relicensing of the Pelton Round Butte Hydro Project, a plan that recognizes the public nature of the water resource and the scarcity of the water in the basin, because we have oversubscribed our surface waters and we need to be creative on how we develop our groundwater, and a plan that has a goal of providing permanent protection and restoration of stream flows needed for fish, wildlife, and recreation in the basin. I don't think anyone on either side of this conflict disagrees about the need to protect those values. I think it's just a question of how we get there, and do it in a way, and my second point would be a second goal of having reliable and affordable agriculture and municipal use in the basin, because those are a part of the landscape. And I think in order for this effort to work, we need an inclusive effort that includes agencies, cities, tribes, conservation interests, businesses. We need deadlines for accomplishing goals, accountability to the legislature. We really think it'll take 4 years to develop something good for the basin. And we think it's very important that we maintain the status quo. And what I mean by that is that we maintain the status quo with respect to the river. So we're not allowing new groundwater permits unless they can meet the mitigation standard identified in the statutes and further clarified by the courts. If we could do that, and if we could be moving forward together, Water Watch would be willing to agree to some kind of timeout, because there are permits that were issued out there under the current mitigation program, and people have expectations. So, you know, figuring out a way to make sure that people who have permits will stay at the table and aren't regulated while we're trying to figure out a way to resolve the water issue in the Deschutes Basin. So I think that's it for my testimony. I really appreciate having the opportunity to comment on this.
Thank you, Karen, and I appreciate your testimony, too, your being here. One of the things, colleagues, I don't want to suppress questions. However, let me tell you what I'd like to do today. I'd like to get through the list of people that we have here to testify on this. We've got, I would guess, quite a bit of time just in testimony, and I'd like to keep our questions to a real minimum, so that when we conclude the meeting today, we have an overview of what the issue is and what the proposed solutions or solution that is present in the bill might be. And then we'll be back on Wednesday to proceed with discussion and then your questions that you may have on this issue. But I see Representative Galto had his hand waving at me there, so.
Just a question about what time the floor session was.
three o'clock.
3 o'clock, I think.
Okay.
We'll try to stay here, and staff will go down and check with and tell them where we're at and excuse us until such time as we absolutely have to go to the floor.
I have a floor speech. I wanted to please.
I'm carrying a bill, so I'll have to be excused.
Well, we can let the bill die. Okay, that's fine. Okay. Thank you very much, Karen. I appreciate your coming. Let me. I've got Doug Riggs and Ken. Is it Fuller, Public Works Director from the City of Bend, and Steve Johnson, I believe, from the Central Oregon Irrigation District. Is there somebody else in the group there? If you could come forward, those folks, and
I want 390-835.
Here's the waterways act.
You're gonna.
Martha Jensen and committee members, my name is Ken Fuller and I'm the Public Works Director and City Engineer for the City of Bend, Oregon. And we're here before you representing both the City of Bend as well as Central Oregon Cities Organization members and our, as well as the Deschutes Water Alliance, at least our portion of that through COCO. The water allocation in the Deschutes Basin is of great concern to those of us who live and are required to manage water resources in our basin. As you know, our economy is growing rapidly, and water is needed to support this development. We're also aware of that a healthy environment and exemplary natural resource protection is a key element in to continue attracting the growth of our economy and also our nationwide reputation as a great place to be. Since the mid-1980s, the City of Bend has been at the table attempting to find solutions to water allocation, which will satisfy all the interests in the basin, the environmental, recreational, development, and a host of others. Many of us in the basin viewed the mitigation program established by OWRD as an interim measure while working collaboratively on a long-term solution based on sound science. However, the recent Court of Appeals decision overturning the basin's groundwater mitigation rules has dealt us a setback in our effort to allocate water while working towards this goal. This has caused uncertainty in our planning process and has caused several of our permit applications to be held up by protests and litigation, costing us several hundred thousands of dollars, if not millions. Let me reiterate, the City of Bend continues to seek a balanced and long-term solution so it can responsibly plan for the future. We believe an important alliance has been established as the vehicle to this long-term solution. That's the Deschutes Water Alliance, otherwise as the DWA. The DWA is comprised of Central Oregon Cities Organization representing the municipal water providers, the Deschutes Board of Control representing the irrigation districts in the basin, the Deschutes River Conservancy, and the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. The alliance came together to carry out the requirements of the Department of Interior Water 2025 grant aimed at developing stream restoration mechanisms. Since then, we have begun to work together on other water items of common interest and hope that in the future we can bring other stakeholders into the alliance. We passed out a brief paper on the alliance as well as some information on the Water 2025. Suffice it to say that our mission can be simply stated as, although its execution is extraordinarily complex. And our items are, one, we want to move stream flows towards a more natural hydrograph based on the sound science while securing and maintaining improved in-stream flows and water quality to support fish and wildlife. two is to secure and maintain a reliable and affordable supply of water to sustain agriculture. And second, lastly, is to secure a safe, affordable, and high-quality water supply for our urban communities. We will need also to see future litigation to carry out our mission in the DWA. And possible elements of this may include provisions to maintain the status quo, which is before you today, House Bill 3494. Secondly, provide a forum for all stakeholders to come together to develop a joint solution of water allocation. And this would include the individual, organizational, local government, state, federal, and tribal interests. Three is to provide direction to the group to develop a consensus plan that will provide the legislature with the necessary direction to resolve water issues in the Deschutes Basin for the long term. Provide a forum that gives stakeholders an incentive to participate and negotiate in a consensus decision, and give the forum the necessary time to work. And our current legislation, we suggest that a final plan with recommendations should be developed in a time to be considered by the 2009 legislative session. It'd be difficult, but not impossible, to develop a consensus plan, but the Deschutes Basin has a long history of dealing with difficult and complex resource issues on a consensus basis. Ben stands ready to work with the committee towards this end, and we respectfully request your support on this bill.
Thank you.
Go ahead, please.
Chair Jensen, committee members, I'm Steve Johnson. I'm the manager of Central Oregon Irrigation District, also the chair of the Deschutes Basin Board of Control, which is an ORS 190 entity of the seven Central Oregon Irrigation Districts, and I'm also Central Oregon Irrigation as a member of the Deschutes Water Alliance. The irrigation district that I represent is smack in the middle of the fastest growing county in the state. In fact, our services are in three counties, the Jefferson, Crook, as well as Deschutes, and have over 9,000 patrons. It is the largest senior right of diversion on the middle of Deschutes, and among the many challenges that are present in our area, the wise management and allocation of the most precious resource, water, is before us. Since the mitigation program was implemented just a few short years ago, it had spawned levels of cooperation and collaboration that I've been told had never existed before. Central Oregon Irrigation District in the last 2 years has executed memorandums of understanding with the cities of Bend and Redmond to deal with water issues. We also have launched significant numbers of projects of conserved water for the predominant share of that conserved water to be returned in stream. And also, pardon me, and we've also been a co-applicant, a voluntary co-applicant, to move 200 water acres of water right permanently in stream, and that was done just a few months ago. So the irrigation district has been active working with its partners in the basin in a collaborative and voluntary way. And an example of conservation projects that we're evaluating within the Deschutes Water Alliance, to give you a relative comparison of volumes, is that Central Oregon Irrigation District has two main canals that run through Bend, the Central Oregon Canal and the Pilot Butte Canal. And if we piped 1 mile of our Pilot Butte Canal, we would conserve 10 cubic feet per second. Now, that amount of savings exists for the first 6 miles of that canal, which if all of that with conserved water goes into the river, that's 60 cubic feet per second for 6 miles of pipe. That's the level of the magnitude of opportunities, and you had heard from Representative Burley of the USGS report that roughly 10 cubic feet per second is existing municipal demand, if not just a little bit over that. So the opportunities are very favorable to conserve water just from our irrigation district alone, as well as other fellow district members in the Deschutes Water Alliance, and that's the path that we'd like to be on. I would mentioned that in the recent Court of Appeals decision that overturned the Deschutes Basin Mitigation Program has dealt us a setback in our efforts to develop these long-term solutions I've just mentioned for the overall and total water needs of the basin. Along with the other members of the Deschutes Water Alliance, it's a stated public mission. There are three primary points: move stream flows toward a more natural hydrograph while securing and maintaining improved in-stream flows and water quality to support fish and wildlife, secure and maintain a reliable and affordable supply of water to sustain agriculture,
secure a safe, affordable, high-quality water supply for urban communities. So I'd urge the committee to move this bill, as to not would create chaos over any water planning for the foreseeable future. And while these rules may not be perfect, they do provide us with a platform to continue to collaborate and develop a basin stakeholder plan of consensus, and that is the intent.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Riggs?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Doug Riggs, the Central Oregon Cities Organization. You've seen me up on this dais each of the last three sessions, plus the five special sessions talking about water, and we've talked about many of these issues over and over. I did want to pass out, and if you look at the blue sheet that's being handed out right now, this is not a new issue. This began back in the 1993 through 1995 timeframe. The legislature looked at this very carefully and established a mitigation program. In 1999 through the 2001 session, we passed House Bill 2184, which established Water Mitigation Bank and encouraged water conservation measures. In the 2003 session, we passed House Bill 3215 and 3217, which were included in Senate Bill 820, one of which allowed the transfer of surface water rights to groundwater rights, and one of which allowed temporary leasing between agriculture and municipalities. And in this session, as you all recall, we've passed House Bill 3038, and one of the things that did very clearly was put into statute management and conservation plans for cities. Now, I raise this because I think it's important for the committee to understand that what the court decision is doing is not just to overturn some small mitigation program. It really is overturning the whole intent and the efforts of the people in the basin for the last 10 years. We've recognized that this is a valuable resource, and the river is a valuable resource from an economic standpoint, from an environmental standpoint, from a public benefit standpoint. And the entire goal has been to band together as in a collaborative effort to constructively plan for the future. That plan includes, as a fundamental principle, leaving more water in stream. And contrary to what you may have heard earlier, I don't know anyone in the basin, anyone involved in any of our organizations, Central Oregon Cities or what have you, who wants to end up with a situation where we are putting the resource at risk. None of us want to see, you know, lower flows or less flows. Representative Burley and Representative Wisnett made the point that since this plan began, we've taken 700 acre feet out in groundwater permits, and we've put 2,500 acre feet back in stream, actual water in stream right now. And so I think it's very clear that we are moving in that direction. The problem with the court decision is that, in my mind, it ignores the big picture. I think I also argue that the case is wrong in the details of the case, but more importantly, it ignores the overall goal that mitigation rules and the above statutes that I mentioned earlier over the three sessions encourage. I'll skip a little bit of my testimony here, but if you look at the facts, on the ground facts, 700 acre feet versus 2,400 acre feet, that's water that will have more than moderate impacts of the flows in the Deschutes. That is actual water today in stream will actually increase flows. And contrary to the decision statement that mitigation would not maintain the flows at the time the impact of those flows occur, what these statistics illustrate very clearly is that in many cases the mitigation that we're pursuing right now will actually have positive impacts on the river's flows years ahead of the time when the groundwater permits will actually be taken out. So what is the impact of this decision? And this really is what I think it boils down to. I think, very simply, that the main problem with this effort is that it overturns what has been a very cooperative and collaborative effort on the part of many of the stakeholders in the region to band together and to think creatively and constructively about how do you address this very serious issue. And so that's my main concern at this point in time, and that's why I think we need a response as soon as we can possibly get one. As earlier mentioned, the legislation before you responds to a direct directive from the judge herself. She noted that, quote, this is a policy decision that is appropriately made by the legislature. And what we are doing before you today is trying to come up with something that we believe is reasonable, that reaffirms the policy decisions that this committee and others have made over the last five sessions, and that encourages a continued collaborative effort in the basin. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we're going to hurry along and ask Martha Pakel to come up. And while we're waiting for Martha to come up, I see you all have a letter from the Sister, or the City of Sisters, you know, addressed to the committee relating to this issue. Let the record show that that's part of the record, and obviously all will be able to read that at your own time. Good afternoon, Martha.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Martha Pagel. I'm an attorney with Schwabe, Williamson, and Wyatt law firm in Portland and Salem. I'm here today on behalf of the City of Redmond, but I'm also here because of the very extensive personal background I have with the subject matter in front of you today. I, along with then-Senator Neil Bryant, led the consensus work group process that led to enactment of Senate Bill 1033 in 1995. That's the bill that created this mitigation program in the first place. And for that, you can stand me up and shoot me for the result that we've got here. Because what the Court of Appeals decided, that the wording of that legislation says, is not anywhere close to what was presented to the legislative committees at the time and what was on the minds of the people who were involved in that process and what is reflected, the very good faith effort that's reflected in the rules that are already in place and that have been working quite well. I know that you're in a hurry today, and I did not have time to prepare written testimony, but I'd be happy to do that for a follow-up. I just want to summarize some key points. Is as noted that this legislation is not by any means an end run around the protection of the scenic waterway law, and it is not an end run around the court decision. It is taking advantage of the invitation that the court gave you to go in and clarify and make sure that you've got a program that makes sense and that can be implemented. The very literal reading that the court gave to the wording of the statute is impossible to implement. And worse yet, it will never restore stream flow in the Deschutes River. And that's what people who are about. The people who've worked on this effort to develop the rules, the people in the Deschutes Water Alliance, the Water Watch. People in the basin want to see the Deschutes River restored and protected. And the approach that's listed by the court won't get you there. Why won't it get you there? Because the court says that in order to mitigate, you have to replace water bucket for bucket, minute for minute, based on the impact. In the first place, you can't measure that. You can't identify that. Impacts have to be estimated and projected. We're talking about groundwater that can take years before it makes its way back to the stream. So we don't know it. But even if we did, then you would be providing mitigation on a year-round basis and never getting to the real critical issue in the Deschutes Basin, which is that the stream flows is severely depleted in the summertime. And the mitigation plan that you have in place right now in these rules and that these folks have worked so hard to develop will restore and improve stream flow during the summer months when it is severely depleted, and it will not create any measurable impact or harm in the winter months. There may be an impact, but I defy you to be able to measure it on a stream gauge given the flows that are available in the river and the point that is projected for impact. So what the department has done in the rules and what the people who worked on those rules tried to do is come up with a plan that did no harm to the river year-round and that restores stream flows in the critical months, and that does carry forward what was in fact the intent of Senate Bill 1033 back in 1995, and as Doug Rigg mentioned, in all of the subsequent times that we've been back here to the legislature, you have known what the department was doing with the rules, you've known what the program was like, and it has been endorsed and embraced. It is restoring stream flows, and I urge you to move forward with this legislation to allow these rules to remain in place and require the department to come back and talk more about it. These people are willing to continue working on the issues. That's not the problem. But we need to maintain the program and the rules and allow the good work to go forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Martha. And I'm not sure whether we're going to get all of Adam's testimony in or not, but I'm sure he'll be back on Wednesday if we don't. And he'll probably be back on Wednesday if we do.
Mr. Chair, I can wait till Wednesday, or we can go now, and I can do something real brief, whatever your
You're not going to be real brief, is what you're telling me?
No, I will be. And I'll be back on Wednesday.
You'd rather come back on Wednesday?
No, I could be brief and also back on Wednesday.
Would you do that, please? Trying to give us, again, the overview so that members of the committee can understand the issue and the proposed solution. So if you could, please, Mr. Sussman.
For the record, I'm Adam Sussman with the Water Resources Department, and Mr. Chair and remaining members of the committee, I have provided some written testimony that you're free to look at your leisure. So I'll just make a couple points real quickly. I think there has been a lot of good testimony that laid out the importance of this program. There are critical resource concerns in the Deschutes Basin. There are critical water needs in the basin. And what we believe the Water Resources Commission did after many years of deliberation is that we developed a good program in the Deschutes Basin that meets the spirit of the Scenic Waterway Act and makes sense for the Deschutes Basin. And what I mean by making sense for the Deschutes Basin is two things. Number one is you can look at a statute that says you need to maintain the flows for the purposes of the Scenic Waterway Act, but you also have to look at the on-the-ground complexity and the complex hydrogeology of the Deschutes Basin to understand how and why it is that the department developed a mitigation program that really that relies on an annual volume of mitigation water and extensive monitoring to ensure that we're protecting those resource values. And again, it was because of the on-the-ground reality that the program is the way it is. And we believe that that program does, in fact, meet the spirit of the Scenic Waterway Act. I think someone mentioned also that this bill, House Bill 3494, does not in any way modify the Scenic Waterway Act. It simply provides that the mitigation program that was developed with the on-the-ground knowledge and science in the Deschutes Basin, in fact, meets the requirements of that Scenic Waterway Act. And finally, Mr. Chair and members, I just wanted to add that the department is also interested in continuing discussions with the stakeholders in the basin in terms of what water management and what mitigation needs to look like in the Deschutes Basin. I would agree with some that have described the rules that have been adopted as not perfect. The rules need additional tweaking, but unfortunately we've been in the Court of Appeals over the rules and haven't really had the opportunity to reevaluate them to make some improvements. So you'll note that the bill does require the department to come back in the year 2009 with a report to this body and after consultation with water users in the basin so that we can get their input, and we're looking forward to doing that. And if I didn't say at the beginning of my testimony that the department supports House Bill 3494, I wanted to let you know that the department does support, as written, House Bill 3494.
Thank you, Adam. I'm not sure, did you identify yourself? I'm trying to remember.
I believe I did.
Okay, that's fine. Quick question for Adam before we adjourn. We will carry over this in a work session on Wednesday, the 8th of June, then, and with nothing else for the good of the order today, we're adjourned.